Hey, this is CJSF 90.1 FM. And you're tuning into our super summer programming. I'm Hallelujah.
And I'm Stella. And together, we'll be highlighting the queer community, environmental issues, and upcoming local events.
Stay tuned for interviews, discussion, and music from our collections.
Welcome, welcome. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. And you are tuning in to Super Summer Programming. We are here live today. My name is Stella.
My name is Hallelujah, and we have a live in studio guest with us today. Do you want to come say hi and introduce yourself?
Hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Will Chernoff. Hallelujah and Stella. It's a pleasure to be in the new CJSF studio. I've only been in the old, so this is my first time in the new.
Woohoo! For anybody tuning in, we slightly moved locations on campus in 2021, but new station for you.
I know that's ancient history for you. I know you're younger.
But yeah, Will over here is a pretty cool little local music person, and I have the boring cut and dry bio I can read out. Or do you want to?
I wonder what that says. Okay. Hit me. I wonder what that says.
Right. Born and raised in New Westminster, bassist and band leader, Will Chernoff performs original instrumental music. Will has released two studio albums, Aim to Stay, featuring a quartet with trumpet, piano, and drums, and Maybe Eventually, where he is joined by a trio by guitar and drums. His newest group, Western Red Cedar, plays Celtic-based music and improvising ensemble. Will is also known for publishing Rhythm Changes, a website that covers Canada's creative music scene with a focus on Vancouver.
Hey, okay. I guess I wrote that at some point. Yeah.
That's the fun thing about creative bios. I had a friend of mine go, it's like, you know, the worst part of the year is having to update it and then just change your age every year.
Yeah. Don't put it in there. You'll get to the point when you'll be like, don't put it in there anymore. We don't need that in there.
Yeah. But I, of course, have just like been a big fan of the work you've done with like your own music and Rhythm Changes. And a huge thing I feel like that's come up amongst like our first couple of weeks of broadcasting is like finding community and community spaces. I was curious, like, what brought you and wanted to make you start immersing yourself in at least in the music communities in Vancouver?
Okay, so this could be big story time, and I have to figure out how far back to go. So
we
I
have an hour.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I like to hear. You may regret that, Stella. You may regret leaving the door that
whole
wide
life story. Let's
for
go.
Me. But you know, musically, I'm a product of my high school music program in a big way. That's where it began for me. I didn't do it before that. I wasn't a musical kid. So I started there. I got so many opportunities to play here in New Westminster. Then I followed that into Kathleen University's jazz program, which at least one of you knows a thing or two about. But you know a lot more about it than me, because then I left. And then I went to go play in the folk scene. I eventually started a band. I toured in Canada with that band until COVID. And during that folk band chapter, I lost touch with the community I came up in, which was the jazz scene. And so then when COVID happened and everybody has this checkpoint of, okay, now what are we doing next? It took me a long time to figure it out. But one of the first things I thought about what to do next was, oh, I got to get back to the jazz community. I want to participate again. And what I have been doing in my late teens, early 20s, was just playing bass with my friends. I recorded my first album at that time, but I thought I could come back and I wanted to get to know all these people. There was this whole younger generation that came through that I hadn't met any of them yet because I'd been out doing other things, and I wanted to play again too, but I didn't know with who. So I wanted to meet everybody, and I didn't have the whole plan drawn up right away, but one of the first things I thought of to start doing was to just start writing on Substack, actually, in 2020. So I just started a Substack. I just reached out to my friends. I told myself in June, July of 2020 that I would keep reaching out to my friends until I got 50 people who just wanted to sign up for free to my Substack. And then once I got 50, then I would publish my first Substack post. And it took me about a week or two, but I got my first 50 people. And then I just started writing about random topics, like about music business or how you do things as an artist or how you apply. Like, I wasn't interviewing people yet or anything. And then it played out over this whole, you know, in this chapter, 2021, 2022. These are weird years. Not everything was happening. But month over month, some stuff started happening. And by the time you get to spring of 22, everything feels like it starts coming back a little bit. And for some of the younger generation, this is their first chance to be out there. So for me, it felt like everything kind of came alive in that spring. And then by that point, I had started interviewing people. Like, if there were like two shows a week in the jazz scene, and those are the only shows that were able to happen during this chapter, you know, I started interviewing those people. Most of them were my existing friends. And I was like, hey, what are you up to? What's your new album? I started the Rhythm Changes podcast, which was the first podcast that I produced. But then in the spring of 22, I get approached by some of these other people in the community, and they're like, hey, this is kind of a summary of a longer story, but there was a guy who was doing a list of all the jazz shows in Vancouver for decades, really. And he stopped doing, I know this guy, and he stopped doing it when COVID started, and nobody has started doing it again, but there's a lot of stuff happening right now. And so you are doing this podcast, and you have this website called Rhythm Changes where you've been messing around. Do you want to do it? And so the whole idea was there for me to do this thing that is now the gig list at Rhythm Changes. And I just said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And so Rhythm Changes just kind of grew from there. The spring of 2022 is kind of when you could date it. So I've kind of been doing it for like 4, 5, 6 years, depending on how you slice it. But really, it was just about I wanted to participate again in the jazz scene that I felt like I belonged to when I was coming up. At that time, I felt isolated from it. But now, I mean, I feel like I'm right in the center of it. I feel really lucky. It's changed so much every single year. It's been fun.
Nice. Was there a reason you left music school, or I'm curious about that?
I'm still curious about that too, after all these years, you know? It's funny, every year you get a little bit of a different perspective on it as you get older. Back then, I really didn't think about it beyond, I just wanted to get out there in the world and try doing my own thing.
Yeah.
That's always kind of what I wanted to do. Maybe I always kind of just thought I would give it a try and then head out. So I think that still holds up as kind of the core reason. Like, I was always just somebody who wanted to see if I could do it my own way, and whatever that meant. Like, I'm willing to make a lot of sacrifices to do things that way. I'm willing to try new things all the time if I have to, and just keep churning it and reinventing it if it means that I get to do it my own way instead of doing what somebody else set out for me. It's a really good way to get me to not do something, is to try and like lay out what I should do, you know? So could be strategic. Some people in my life have been strategic about that, maybe because they know that. But I always just wanted to do my own thing. I knew that I don't have a teacher's skill set. I'm at the age now where so many of my CAPU jazz peers who graduated and went through the program, their teachers, a lot of them are really well suited to it, and they're really lovely people, and they have that skill set and the patience that is required to work well in that system. It's a very challenging system. I've heard about that from different people, and I respect that so much. I know that I don't have that skill set. I never did. I did it when I was a teenager, and I definitely don't now. And that's something that I would recommend anybody who goes to music school think about. Hallelujah, you might have had to think about this at some point. But from my perspective, if you're going to go to post-secondary music today, it's like, do I want to be a teacher, and to what extent, yes or no? That's maybe one of the most useful questions I'd think you could ask yourself before you go, or before you decide to go, about how well it's going to go for you or where it's going to take you. Because whatever answer you feel you have to that question, it could really inform you about what you want to do next. Yeah.
Yeah. 100% on like going to music school and teaching thing. I agree with you. I'm somebody who's definitely not interested at this point in my life in going into music education. And I have a lot of respect for the people that do it, because the people that go out of their way to go into music education are the reason why I'm, you know, like in music.
That's so true. You're right. Same. You
know.
Yeah.
But I know I would not be happy doing it. And the level of effort and patience that's required to get it through. But at almost point, and like for context to our listeners, I did a diploma at Selkirk College in contemporary music studies, and I'm currently finishing my bachelor's in performance at Kaplan, or not teaching.
Uh-huh.
And I had to do a little bit of soul searching about that. I was like, oh, like I do want my undergrad, but you know, teaching seems like the safer option. But again, when in my life and deciding and being a musician, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go with the safe option career-wise. And, you know, like, it's a pretty complex thing. And I think, personally, if you're debating getting a little piece of paper on music right now, we should really also, I don't know, decide if... I'm trying to word this pretty eloquently, but that, like, I look what your core kind of thing of wanting to get out of it is. If you want to immediately get into playing and gigging, and you already have like a good, like, you know, base of music, you can just go do that.
Yeah,
there's nothing holding you back from going straight into your gigging career. But besides the point. I'm curious, like, you're like, I'm a little bit younger and I started playing music right after the pandemic. And I'm just curious, like, what your thoughts are on, like, for me, because this is the only jazz scene or music scene at all that I've gotten to experience, like, as an adult. Do you think that there's been, like, a huge explosion in, like, jazz in Vancouver? Or is it just me being young and this is the first time I'm seeing, like, the jazz scene kind of pop off?
So even though you don't know the before times, do you feel like it is possible that people would say that there's an explosion right now?
I think that there's like a pretty big like cultural shift right now where we can go on like a 20-minute tangent about how people crave storytelling and an age of AI, but I've had friends of mine who have never picked up a jazz record go, hey, Hal, you know any jazz shows going on right now? And I was like, this is strange, but I'm into this. Yeah. As well as, like, you know, I've seen like a lot of shows, a lot of people who may not be interested in like more traditional jazz shows going to like the Infidels, like video game music shows, be like, dude, this is what goes on at this place. This is what people play. I'm like, huh, like, I think there's been a bit of a shift, I think, personally, in how people approach live music. I was just...
Yeah, I would summarize, I think a lot of my peers would agree with both sides of what I'm about to describe. But yeah, people have their different vantage points. Generation older than us would have something to add as well. They have more periods to compare it to. For me, I only have two periods to compare. I have the 2010s, early to mid-2010s for me, especially because I left and did the folk stuff after that. But I got the 2010s when I was coming up, and I've got now, when admittedly now I have as much visibility into the scene as you possibly could, but you know, you could say that means I didn't know half the stuff that was happening back in the 2010s, which is true. I still want to go back and interview so many of those people at Rhythm Changes and learn more about what was Merge, what was 1067, etc. That all that said, I think a lot of my peers would agree that in the 2010s we felt like we were in music university at a down period where we knew what was happening and we felt like it would be great if there was more happening. And we did not have as many opportunities to get out there and play as people who are the age now that we were back then do now. We absolutely didn't. And it's very cool that there's so many more opportunities for younger players now to play all kinds of different things. The boundaries of what is quote unquote the jazz scene has exploded due to hard work, risk taking, presence of presenters and musicians who show up and they're doing all these different kinds of shows like you alluded to there with Infidels Jazz and the broad spectrum of popular shows that they put on where it's jazz players, but there's all these different themes and concepts like anime and video games and movies that none of that existed in the 2010s. There's so much new ground there. So I think a lot of people would agree that in my youth in the 2010s, it was maybe a down period. You certainly heard about how great the 80s and 90s were,
yeah,
as a young person in the 2010s. And that this is a period of time. I mean, I'm biased towards the presenters, to be honest, because in my day work, I do client work for the music companies. A lot of them are the ones here in the scene. So I hear about what they think. And I mean, I think a lot of people, presenters and players alike, agree that there is a lot of opportunity to play right now and that it's alive. It's been alive and we're kind of on top of the wave at the moment. And I just don't want to take that for granted. I hope it can keep going for as long as it can. I know it won't always be that way.
Yeah, and just like from more of an outsider's perspective from the jazz scene, y'all are talking about this like explosion, right? But I was wondering if there's any new aspects that are part of that, or if it's mostly just like more volume of performers and people involved.
There are presenters today who are taking more chances on people, who are taking bigger swings, and in some cases there's been more funding that's able to be rallied towards presenters and projects at this time than maybe 10 years ago. There's all kinds of reasons for that, but from an outside perspective, I'd say you can start to get a view of the jazz scene through four companies, presenters, venues in no particular order. There's obviously Coastal Jazz, the Coastal Jazz and Blues Society, who put on the Vancouver International Jazz Festival that just happened in late June, early July. There's Infidels Jazz, led by Tim Reinert, which is a new institution of this era and presents a wide variety of shows, a lot of which Hallelujah and her friends have played, and a lot of which my friends have played. There is Cellar Music, which is a record label, but it's closely tied to Frankie's Jazz Club through Corey Weeds, who's the founder of the Cellar label, and Corey books Frankie's. That is the quote-unquote jazz club at the heart of Vancouver, the most active and gets the most footfall in the straight-ahead mainstream jazz area. And Cellar does other stuff too. Cellar's my biggest client, so I'm very biased when I'm talking about them because they pay me the most money of anybody. But, you know, you've got Coastal Jazz, Cellar, Infidels Jazz, Tyrant Studios upstairs at the historic Penthouse nightclub is a very frequent jazz venue and a great sounding room and a very lively place to be during the jazz festival and year round. So from the presenter centric view, there's those four. There are others. There are a lot of others too. But if you start with who are those four people, who are those four presenters, you will have more shows in front of you than you will have time to make it out to.
Cool. Maybe we should head to the music for a couple songs.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start off with, I think this is the one you recommended. We're going to play Library Card off the record Brighton Train. We'll play it on this one. That's the fun fact for this tune.
Yes. I love fun facts.
Yeah. Hope you enjoy.
Enjoy.
us each Friday from 3 to 4 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM for Studio 6 to hear an organic combination of performance and interview by inspiring artists and community conversations. Broadcast live atop Burnaby Mountain or selected from our audio archive, we invite you to listen in.
Hello, everybody. My name is Hallelujah, and I'm here with
Stella,
of course, and
Will Chernoff.
Yeah, you just heard a track off of the album Brighton Train called Library Card that Will played on, actually. We've just been chatting a little bit about music and jazz in Vancouver and Will's experience working on your blog, podcast, gig list situation, rhythm changes. It's been a delightful little bit, so thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for playing that track. That's Madeline Elkins, guitar player. That's Madeline Elkins Trio with me and Kevin Romaine on drums. Yeah, it's the most recent album that I've played on.
Nice. I have a question about your blog, actually. Like, I know Substack and Medium are, like, quite popular right now, but otherwise, I think that's more of a recent uptick, but I feel like blogs are, like, a lesser consumed medium. And I was wondering, like, you mentioned a bit about how you grew your, like, audience, I guess, by mentioning it to friends and stuff. But I was wondering how you took that to, like, a larger scale. And if there was a lot of, like, things that you did intentionally that worked or some things that were just more so random. And, like, you know, I feel like online stardom is kind of random sometimes.
Online stardom, I wouldn't claim for sure. Another thing you would have to know about me, Stella, is that... very little is intentional.
Yeah.
A lot of it is random walk.
Yeah.
But it was the list. It was this gig list that started in the spring of 22 when everything came back. You know, that's what people started. Basically, it's like I launched the list with this model where it was like, I'm already like, I have a newsletter every week where I send out the latest interview I did or the latest thing I wrote or episodes of the Rhythm Changes podcast that came out, now videos or whatnot. So I send out the stuff that I write or produce Rhythm Changes in this newsletter. But then I started like copying the week's upcoming shows in the Vancouver creative music, jazz, improv related scenes. Basically any kind of music I like is what I add on the list. But I started copying the week's upcoming shows off the list page and putting it in the email so that people could follow what was happening just from the email. So it's like goes out every Tuesday. I copy the shows from Tuesday to Monday. Now there's so many shows, I curate which shows I include in the email too. And there's two cities now. I do this in Calgary too. There's a friend of mine named David Lavoie, who's a multi-instrumentalist and a Calgary music scene person. He's doing a Calgary list now. It's just started in June, like I've been doing in Vancouver. So now I have Vancouver and Calgary in the email. That's what people started signing up to the free newsletter for. I added a paid subscription side of it too, where I write to the paying subscribers on Friday, which is a smaller group, but it's allowed Rhythm Changes to always pay its own way. Like, it's never costed me any money to do it. It makes a little bit of money, and I spend that on the cost to run it and on going to shows that I'm writing about. So I've just expected only that much. I don't expect it to pay me personally. I just expect it to pay its own way, and always has. And people have continued to come in through the front door of the gig list service, basically. And it's very silly because when I go to shows and when I stand in line for the bathroom at shows, I get approached by random people and they're like, thank you for doing the gig list. And if I'm with my friends, I get super, super embarrassed. Well, I do even if I'm by myself, to be honest, but I'm very grateful for that.
That kind of sounds like semi-stardom to me.
Niche micro-influencer, maybe?
It's all about... all about niche my whole life, that's for sure. I don't know anything other than a good niche. I depend on it.
Okay. I have like a little philosophy in my day-to-day, a little life thing. Whenever there's like a rule or something that has to be stated, there's usually a story behind it. And I was like digging through your website, and I mean, like, it's just like, I think good broadcasting or publishing thing, but you have like a pretty comprehensive like FAQ, and I really appreciated reading kind of about the transparency that you have in everything. Is there a story?
Well, that's interesting because I wrote those a long time ago. I don't really remember what I wrote in them, but I once hosted you on the Rhythm Changes podcast in 2022. I probably wrote them around that time because that's kind of when I set up the website and the structure I just talked about with the gig list and the newsletter, which is called the Free Weekly, and then the subscriptions and the different